I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
What we're witnessing is really the opening salvo in a campaign by anti-abortion activists to use the conservative capture of the courts to ban abortion, not just in red states, but nationwide.
The U.S. Justice Department has asked the Supreme Court to block an appeals court ruling limiting access to mifepristone. We'll look at the legal battle over the abortion pill, as well as Florida's new six-week abortion ban. Then to President Biden's trip to Ireland, marking the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement that ended three decades of fighting in Northern Ireland. Finally, in New Jersey, it's day five of the first faculty strike in Rutgers University's 257-year history. A Cuban journalist as Washington and Havana hold talks focused on migration. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Florida's Republican Governor Ron DeSantis signed a six-week abortion ban into law Thursday. The ban will take effect if Florida's current 15-week ban is upheld at the conservative-controlled state Supreme Court, where it's being challenged. The six-week ban would make exceptions for rape, incest and human trafficking. In such cases, survivors could get an abortion up to 15 weeks into pregnancy, but only if they're able to provide official documentation such as a police report or medical records. Since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade last year, many pregnant people in the South have traveled to Florida for abortions. Democratic minority leader Fentress Driscoll spoke out against the six-week ban during a debate in the Florida House of Representatives Thursday.
This is not reasonable because it amounts to an outright ban. Most women don't know that they are pregnant at 6 weeks. Let's be clear about the silent part. You just don't want women to have choice.
Meanwhile, in Washington state, U.S. District Judge Thomas Rice has rebuffed Wednesday's appeals court ruling that temporarily restored access to the abortion medication mifepristone across the United States, but with restrictions. Judge Rice said the drug is to remain available restriction-free to 17 states in the District of Columbia following his ruling last Friday, ordering the FDA to not roll back access to the abortion pill. The Justice Department also said it's asking the U.S. Supreme Court for an emergency order to halt Wednesday's restrictions on mifepristone. Protests to save abortion access are planned across the country this weekend. We'll have the latest on the state of reproductive rights in the U.S. after headlines. Calls are growing for Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas to be impeached after ProPublica on Thursday released more damning information about his relationship with Republican megadonor Harlan Crow. In 2014, Thomas and his family sold a house and two vacant lots in Savannah, Georgia, to Crow for about $130,000, but never disclosed the sale, which appears to be a violation of the 1978 Ethics in Government Act. This comes after ProPublica published a bombshell investigation last week detailing unreported luxury trips Harlan Crow lavished on Thomas over 20 years. In addition to being a major benefactor to Thomas and the GOP, Crow is also an avid collector of Nazi memorabilia. He has a signed copy by Hitler of Mein Kampf and Hitler's paintings. Federal authorities have arrested a 21-year-old Massachusetts man over the recent leak of highly classified Pentagon intelligence documents. Attorney General Merrick Garland announced the arrest Thursday.
Today, the Justice Department arrested Jack Douglas Teixeira in connection with an investigation into alleged unauthorized removal, retention, and transmission of classified national defense information. Teixeira is an employee of the United States Air Force National Guard.
Teixeira is an enlisted airman first class, one of the Air National Guard's lowest ranks. He worked in the Guard's 102nd Intelligence Wing. Federal authorities say he was also the leader of an online chat group that shared racist memes and information about guns on the Discord online platform popular among gamers. He's due in federal court in Boston, Massachusetts today for his arraignment, where he faces charges under the Espionage Act. A newly discovered batch of classified U.S. intelligence documents leaked online shows infighting among Russian officials over the war in Ukraine. The documents reveal Russia's Federal Security Service accused the Russian military of downplaying the number of casualties in Ukraine due to the reluctance of officials to convey bad news up the chain of command. Other newly discovered leaked documents reveal the U.S. has been closely spying on U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres. U.S. intelligence officials accused him of being overly soft on Russian President Vladimir Putin. Meanwhile, Germany's foreign minister has urged China to use its influence on Moscow to push for an end to the war, following similar calls from French President Macron and the European Union. In Russia, supporters of the jailed opposition leader Alexei Navalny say his health has rapidly deteriorated in recent days. Spokesperson Kira Yarmish says Navalny lost nearly 20 pounds in just 2 weeks after complaining of stomach pains.
We can't rule out the idea that he is being poisoned even now, but not in huge dosage as before. But in small ones, so that he not, for him not to die immediately, but to suffer.
Navalny is one of President Vladimir Putin's most prominent critics. In 2020, he narrowly survived an apparent assassination attempt when he was poisoned with the nerve agent Novichok. Saudi Arabia has exchanged more than 800 prisoners of war with Yemen's Houthi rebels. It's the largest such prisoner exchange since 2020 and comes after Saudi Arabia and Iran recently agreed to restore ties, boosting the prospects for a negotiated settlement to the U.S.-supported Saudi-led war on Yemen, which has left over 21 million people in need of assistance. Meanwhile, Saudi Arabia has reached a deal to resume consular services with Syria after the first trip by a Syrian foreign minister to the kingdom since Syria's civil war began in 2011. The award-winning Central American independent news outlet El Faro announced Thursday it's relocating most of its operations from El Salvador to Costa Rica as repression against free press intensifies under the government of the Salvadoran President Nayib Bukele. El Faro journalists and newsroom staff have faced physical threats, judicial persecution, and in 2021, it was revealed nearly two dozen of them were being surveilled with the Israeli NSO group's Pegasus spyware. President Biden announced Thursday his administration plans to expand health care access to hundreds of thousands of immigrants brought to the U.S. as children. People with deferred action for childhood arrivals, or DACA, would be able to enroll in Medicare if they're low income or find coverage through the Affordable Care Act. This comes at a time where the rate of uninsured people in the country is at a record high. North Dakota's Republican Governor Doug Burgum signed a law Tuesday banning trans girls and women from participating in school sports. Similar laws now exist in 19 other states, though a new rule proposed by the Biden administration is seeking to outlaw such blanket bans, setting conservative states up for a clash with the federal government. Meanwhile, in Nebraska, State Senator Michaela Kavanaugh has been filibustering an anti-trans package for 7 weeks. The measure seeks to ban gender-affirming care for minors and penalize their health care providers.
I'm going to give you everything I can for your children, and I will continue. No matter what happens today, I will continue, and I am sorry. But there's nothing more I can do within my control. I am doing everything I can within my control, and I am sorry.
Nebraska State Senator Kavanaugh has blocked every related bill from consideration in the legislature, vowing to, quote, burn this session to the ground over this bill, unquote. Nebraska's filibuster rules allow for taking bathroom breaks and sitting. And in France, Hundreds of thousands of people flooded the streets Thursday in the latest protests against President Emmanuel Macron's measure raising the retirement age from 62 to 64. The mobilizations came as France's top court is expected to rule today on the policy's constitutionality after Macron rammed it through by executive fiat. In Paris, protesters stormed the headquarters of luxury group LVMH, demanding France's wealthiest contribute more to financing the state pension.
They are looking for solutions to finance the pension system. There is a very simple solution. It is to take from the pockets of billionaires. We are here at the headquarters of LVMH. This is the seat of Bernard Arnault, who is the richest billionaire of all billionaires in France and in the whole world. If the social security funds are running out, they can come and get money here, among other places.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show looking at the status of abortion access in the United States. Less than a year after the Supreme Court overturned the constitutional right to abortion in Roe v. Wade, it's expected to weigh in today on a ruling set to take effect Saturday that effectively overrides the Food and Drug Administration's 20-year-old approval of the medication abortion pill mifepristone. This comes after the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals Wednesday partially blocked last week's ruling by a Trump-appointed federal judge in Texas that banned the pill nationwide. It upheld parts of the decision that will only allow patients to access the pill through a doctor's office or clinic and not through the mail or over the counter. Meanwhile, in Washington State, U.S. District Judge Thomas Rice has rebuffed Wednesday's appeals court ruling, saying the drug is to remain available restriction-free in 17 states and the District of Columbia, following his ruling last Friday ordering the FDA to not roll back access to mifepristone as a result of a lawsuit brought by the attorneys general in those 17 states and D.C. Protests to save abortion are planned across the country this weekend, including in Florida, where Governor Ron DeSantis has just signed a six-week abortion ban into law that will take effect if Florida's current 15-week ban is upheld at the conservative-controlled state Supreme Court, where it's being challenged. For more, we're joined by Amy Littlefield. She's the abortion access correspondent at The Nation. Her most recent piece, "A Conservative Christian Judge Rules Against Medication Abortion, How Hard Will Democrats Fight Back?" Before we go to the nationwide battle, Amy Littlefield, although they're all connected, let's go to the latest that's just taken place in Florida, Ron DeSantis signing yesterday a six-week abortion ban. Talk about what this means.
Yes. And first, I just want to say, Amy, happy belated birthday. And I wish that we were here celebrating and not staring down the ghost of Anthony Comstock and the looming possibility of a nationwide abortion ban. But you're right to start with Florida, because that is absolutely essential. If you look at the map of abortion access in this country, Florida is almost an island in the South. In the 6 months after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, no state saw a higher rise in abortion patients traveling to the state for care than Florida. There were more than 7,000 additional abortions that happened in the state after the Dobbs decision compared to before over that six-month period. And so Florida has been a haven for abortion patients all across the South. And the fact that they now have this six-week ban is going to have a ripple effect across the entire nation, because we're going to see people pushed further and further out. We're going to see wait times extending at clinics all across the country in order to meet the need of this surge in patients. And of course, there will be an untold number of people who resign themselves to unwanted pregnancies because of this.
And Amy, could you talk about what happened on Wednesday with the three-judge panel in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in Texas, partially upholding a nationwide ban on mifepristone that a federal judge issued there, and what that order is going to look like on the ground?
I think that is the big question, Juan, and the reigning sentiment right now among abortion providers, among legal experts, is confusion, because we don't have a script for something like this, for a judge trying to revoke the government agency in charge of reviewing drugs, you know, trying to roll back decades of scientific advancements and approvals. And so as best we can tell, what happened, you know, to recap, a rogue judge in Texas tried to revoke the FDA's 23-year-old approval of mifepristone last Friday. And then in the middle of the night, overnight on Wednesday, two Trump appointees, who are among the most conservative judges in our country, looked at that ruling and said, okay, even we think that Judge Matthew Kaczmarek went too far here. You can't reach back 23 years and revoke the approval of a drug like this. The statute of limitations does not allow that. But what they did do is try to roll back the clock to a time before 2016 when the FDA's regulations required people seeking medication abortion to go to a clinic in person three times to take a higher dose of the drug that causes more side effects, that capped the gestational age for medication abortion at 7 weeks instead of 10 weeks, and that required doctors rather than nurse practitioners or physician assistants to prescribe it. So they're trying to reinstate this reality. If the Fifth Circuit gets their way, that's what will happen. Now, of course, there's mitigating factors, including the fact that even during that time period when those regulations were in place, there was off-label use of mifepristone that allowed people who were through 10 weeks to get access to medication abortion. So we don't know how the FDA is going to respond to whatever ruling ends up coming from the Supreme Court. What we do know is right now, nothing has changed because these orders are not in effect. Medication abortion is still available in states where it was legal and unavailable in states where it's illegal, unless you're going to go to plancpills.org and look for ways to reach around those legal channels. And all eyes are on the Supreme Court, and defenders of abortion rights are in the highly unenviable position of relying on the Supreme Court and its three Trump nominees who were put on that court precisely to undermine abortion rights to save abortion access in America. There's another really important piece. I was just going to say, there's another really important piece that you've already covered on the show, and that's the ghost of Anthony Comstock that is hanging over all of this. And I'm glad you had Lauren McIver Thompson on the show. It's amazing that we need a 19th century historian to explain the state and future of abortion rights in America. But both Judge Matthew Kaczmarek's ruling and the First Fifth Circuit ruling that came out overnight on Wednesday pay credence and seem to support the reinstatement of the Comstock Act to be used in stopping the mailing of medication abortion drugs. And that could be catastrophic. And if the Supreme Court supports that idea, it would be tantamount potentially to a nationwide ban on abortion, including in blue states, because it's very hard for clinics to operate if they can't use the mail.
And you mentioned the Supreme Court. How likely is this to get there, and how quickly do you envision it getting to the court?
Right. It could happen very fast because the Biden administration, you know, we have this situation where there's conflicting rulings. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals has said one thing. A judge out of Washington State has said in 17 states in Washington, D.C., the FDA may not impose any new requirements. And so the FDA is facing these two conflicting rulings. And so I think what abortion rights advocates are hoping is that the Supreme Court is going to act between between now and Saturday before the Fifth Circuit ruling would take effect in order to preserve access to mifepristone and medication abortion. That's sort of the best case scenario. Of course, we don't know what the Supreme Court is going to say. But even if they do come in and save the day here when it comes to medication abortion, I think everyone should be paying very close attention to what they say on the 1873 Comstock Act and whether they think that it could apply to the mailing of medication, abortion, drugs, and devices.
Amy, on Thursday, Democracy Now! Reached Francine Cueto, the co-founder of Plan C, which provides information on how people in the U.S. are accessing at-home abortion pill options online.
If you're a person, just a person who can afford to go online and purchase the pills, go online, purchase them, put them in your medicine cabinet, and share them with friends, tell people about it. Make sure you have access to these pills. There are many routes of access, and our Plan C website will tell you how to do wherever you live, what your access to these very safe and very, up until today, legal pills. If you're a clinician, continue to do what you can to provide and do the best you can. If you're a lawyer, step up and fight this undemocratic attack on use of the judiciary to try to literally break all sorts of conventions that are really so undemocratic, it's hard to believe they're happening. If you're an activist, get out in the streets and talk about this. Do your bit. Everyone needs to step up. I think this is a moment in time, and we all have a role. And this will not be taken away because it's really an attack on our agency, on our rights, on our human autonomy.
Again, that's Francine Cueto, the co-founder of Plan C, which is a play on Plan B, the morning after pill. But this follows up on a quote of yours in your piece, Amy, from Amy Hagstrom Miller, founder of Whole Women's Health, saying, "I don't think the courts are the only path for justice." That comes from someone who sued the state of Texas 11 times. "We can't be too naive to think that the only path for justice here is going to be in the courts. So what are the other options?" And we're going to end with that, Amy. We're at a point, right, where about a dozen states have outlawed abortion. Talk about the grassroots movement and what difference that can make in this country.
Right. I mean, the grassroots movement here is huge. And just because you're not hearing about it doesn't mean it's not happening. That can be intentional, right? Aid Access has seen a huge surge in people seeking advance provision, meaning ordering medication abortion kits so that they have them on hand in case they need them or need to give them to a friend. All of the different telemedicine services have seen a surge in interest and questions about getting medication abortion ahead of time. So people are preparing to help each other, to help their neighbors, to be ready. And those grassroots networks are huge. And sometimes they're through the legal channels, like abortion funds that are paying for people's flights, are doing airlifts, are getting people to abortion clinics. And sometimes they're underground and less formalized than they have to do with, you know, bringing pills in from groups like Las Libres in Mexico or ordering them from overseas through channels like PlanCPills.org. And providers like Amy Hagstrom Miller have been out front saying, look, whatever the court is going to do here, we're going to wait to hear from the Biden administration because we take our orders from the FDA. So I've got one final thing here that can happen, which is for Democrats, right? I mean, we've seen Democratic officials at the state level in states like California, Washington State, Massachusetts, New York, stockpiling medication abortion pills. For Democrats in Congress, I've got something you can do today. Introduce legislation to repeal the Comstock Act. Even if it doesn't pass, put every Republican in Congress on record trying to resuscitate the ghost of a man who wanted to ban contraception and boasted of driving his targets to suicide with his anti-obscenity crusades. bring Anthony Comstock back. Let's have a public airing about his legacy, because Republicans understand they can't ban abortion nationwide unless they're able to resuscitate this law from 1873. And that's what they're trying to do. So Democrats, you know, if they needed a plan on abortion, here, I'm giving you a plan. Try this. Repeal the Comstock Act, because that is the strategy for anti-abortion activists moving forward. And these lawsuits are clear evidence.
And of course, Amy, there are Republicans who also are pro-choice, like Congressmember Mace.
Right. Of course. And we need to hear from them, and we need to hear, have a full airing, because abortion rights are popular, right? They're popular across party lines. Referendum after referendum has shown us that. The Wisconsin State Supreme Court election just showed us that, right? And so anti-abortion strategists are trying to go through these back channels using conservative courts that have been stacked with Trump appointees. And the more that we can talk about this in public, the better.
Amy Littlefield, abortion access correspondent at The Nation. We'll link to your piece, "A Conservative Christian Judge Rules Against Medication Abortion. How Hard Will Democrats Fight Back?" Next up, we go to Ireland, as President Biden's there marking the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement that ended more than three decades of fighting in Northern Ireland. Stay with us.
My mellow latte was kicking flavors. The Ari Bossy said, "Yo, Latifah, we can do this." So I paused and took a thought, then my brilliance I caught, and I agreed, because I already knew this. Now you should want a flex, because I'm in full effects. Queen Latifah is 5-0 on this set. You've been begging and dying for somebody's rhyming to set you free. For God so loved the world he gave you me. I'm cooling, teaching those me is schooling. And the mic, this mic in my hand, I'm pulling. So prepare your mind for my lifeline. Queen of royal badness. Latifah has the spirit, so we'll head for the water and dive into the wrath of my madness.
Hustle, you've been getting higher. Cause here to run away. Queen Latifah getting higher. Cause here to run away.
Some MCs act bold and arrogant, vain, and using each other to compete with. These subjects are pity, cause their minds are not witty. Like Maserati around it, so delicious you could eat it.
Wrath of My Madness by Queen Latifah. This week, she became the first female rapper to be inducted into the Library of Congress's National Recording Registry for her 1989 album, All Hail the Queen. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. President Biden is wrapping up his trip this week to Ireland to mark the 25th anniversary of the U.S.-brokered peace deal known as the Good Friday Agreement that ended three decades of fighting in Northern Ireland. Earlier today, Biden visited his ancestral hometown in County Mayo. On Thursday, he addressed the Irish Parliament in Dublin.
This week marks a vital milestone for peace. 25 years ago, the Belfast Good Friday Agreement, 25 years ago, one of my best friends in the Senate and a great, great friend to this day is George Mitchell. As he said, there were 300 days of failure, or 700 days of failure, and one day of success. But it was a success that one day. But more is to be done. Yesterday, I was in Belfast to honor those who commit themselves to peace. To reiterate the enduring support of the United States for the Good Friday Agreement and Northern Ireland's democratic institutions. I think that the United Kingdom should be working closer with Ireland in this endeavor. Political violence must never again be allowed to take hold in this island.
President Biden's visit comes less than 2 months after British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak announced he'd reached a deal with the European Union on post-Brexit trade rules for Northern Ireland. Sunak said the deal will remove any sense of border in the Irish Sea. We go now to Derry in Northern Ireland, where we're joined by Eamon McCann, journalist, writer, activist, former member of the Northern Ireland Assembly, also took part in the march on Bloody Sunday in 1972 and helped form the Bloody Sunday Trust. He's the author of the recently republished 1974 book War and an Irish Town. Well, given your history, Eamon, and also talking about the present this week, the visit of President Biden, can you talk about the significance of this trip in Northern Ireland and Ireland?
Well, I think how we evaluate the significance of it depends on the political perspective which we individually have. I think that my own view, sort of the main purpose of Mr. Biden's trip from the American point of view, from the point of view of the Biden